This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 145. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
And you can call us on
0208 816 7691.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway. Welcome to the latest Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, and this week we've got plenty to talk about, the most notable of which, if you've been anywhere near pitchvision.com this week, is the major signing, the exclusive signing of one of the world's top batsmen at the moment, Kevin Peterson. So, Garraz, what do you think about that?
Well, it's great to be working along with KP again. It's something that we enjoyed doing for 4 years, during some pretty good times for him in particular. It was a magnificent day or two that we spent putting together the course with somebody who's reached the peaks of the game and is always looking to try and hit dizzier heights. So it's great to be around KP. He's such a positive type of guy, and I think that everybody should be getting hold of his course when it comes out, because there's some fantastic messaging in there and probably a few surprises for people along the way.
Yeah, you can get details for that, by the way, if you head over to pitchvision.com/KP, pitchvision.com/KP, and that'll give you all the details of the course when it's out, and also some free exclusive previews of the course, some videos and some advice that KP gave during the filming. It was a great day at the Oval, wasn't it, Garraz? You were there, you were giving KP throwdowns like the good old days?
Yeah, absolutely. It took me back a bit, and fortunately, he didn't smash too many back at me like he used to. So, so that was good. It was fantastic to see him close up again, and also just to hear him talking about the game, because I was in the privileged position of spending every day pretty much with him and having some great conversations with him about the game and about how he manages himself and how he trains. And it was interesting to hear from his agent, who obviously knows him very, very well, and Adam, who said that he'd never heard him talk like that. And I said to Adam, well, I was lucky enough to have that every single day that I work with him, and it's great that now everybody can get access to those thoughts and the way that he puts things across.
Yeah, he was very revealing. He didn't hold back at all, did he? He sort of came out with all his ideas and his theories and his tactics. But the thing that I noticed the most, you know, standing by the camera man, who was working the camera from the front view, the thing that I noticed the most was just how hard he hit the ball without really that much effort.
Yeah, and that takes years of practice. And I think sometimes Kev gets misplaced, really, in that people call him a genius. And I think it comes out over the course of the filming that we did and in the course itself, that there's not too much genius about it. Yes, he has got some latent natural talent, but it's the hard work that sits behind it and the smart work that sits behind it that has enabled him to hit the ball so cleanly without seemingly sort of putting too much power into it. And that's the same for any world class player. It's the amount of hours and the smart hours that they've put in, and he's an absolute expert in doing that.
Well, yeah, it's the old cliche, isn't it, that genius is 99% perspiration and 1% inspiration. So I'm not sure who originally said that, but there's a lot of truth in that. And when you hear KP tell those stories directly, you know, you get that message from him that, you know, it wasn't all handed to him on a plate. You know, when he started, he was, you know, everybody thought, well, he gives it a slog down the order and, you know, he's an off spinner, mainly you can give it a bit of a tweak.
Yeah, and it's a good story, isn't it, really, that angle of it. And I think he describes that well on the course as well.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, people can get pigeonholed quite early in their career, and he's an example of somebody who's broken through that. And you know, there's lots of people, and we get lots of questions on this show that's about people wanting to change from seamer to off spin, and is it a good idea? Well, Kev's a great example of somebody who made the decision fairly late in life to change his discipline and change the priority of his discipline, and look at the success he's had.
You've got to admire the work ethic and the way that he approaches the game, and what he's achieved is outstanding. It doesn't matter what you think of KP himself. And he comes across really well in the course on the videos. And you can find out more about that by going to pitchvision.com/KP. But I want to talk a little bit about some games that are going on at the moment. We'll gloss over England's performance against Pakistan, and we'll head straight for the Ranji Trophy, the pinnacle of the Indian first class season, the Ranji Trophy. And it's Rajasthan who, of course, have an opening batsman of Akash Chopra, who is another coach on the Pitch Vision Academy coaching panel. So we really do have the names here. And they're playing Tamil Nadu, who are a strong side. So I guess the question for people listening is, when you're in a big final like that, you're at a neutral venue, the pressure is increased. What is it that you do differently? What is it that the players will be looking to do differently to prepare for such an event of a match?
Yeah, well, it's a massive game, isn't it, in the Indian calendar, and one that every player wants to play in. So naturally you'll get that increase in motivation, increase in specifics that goes into preparing for any final, really. But the thing that makes it slightly different for me is a neutral venue, because both sides will be less familiar with that ground than they would do either of their home venues, or even playing around the country against other states. So the first thing that would happen would be that somebody would be doing some really good analysis on what wins games of cricket at that particular venue. You know, whether you bat first, whether you bowl first, what sort of scores you should be looking to get in the first innings to set yourself up. You know, whether you play an extra spinner or not, which is topical with the England game going on presently.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's lots of analysis that can be done that then inform your strategies, both in selection, in deployment of your players, and also from your tactics.
But when it comes to actual preparation, I think you'll probably agree with me, Gareth, that you won't change much in the way that you do things. Each player will have a routine, a well-established routine that they know works for them. And they don't want to be changing things too much. They want to be getting to the ground at the time they normally get to the ground and doing all the things that they normally do.
Yeah, I mean, that's routine, isn't it? And you're going to keep that, because that's the thing that's got you to the final in the first place. So you must have been putting all of the bits and bobs together on the journey through to the final. So you don't want to change anything like that. You probably want to just add a bit of specificity into it as well. So if you're playing on a pitch, it's going to turn and break up in the last couple of innings, then your preparation into that game may differ from your normal preparation. Equally, if you're playing somewhere like Mohali in a final, which has a bit more pace and bounce than most of the normal wickets, then you can cater your practice around that. Make some tennis balls hit at you, but everything will be geared around the analysis that goes on in that venue. Because if it tells you something, then you've got to be prepared for this game. And finding out that there's some demons in there that you could quite easily have found out beforehand and analysed beforehand and incorporated into your practice. Your routines stay the same. That's not going to change. But it's that last sort of 5% really that you're looking to sharpen and get the advantage over the opposition.
Yeah, and there's parallels there for people listening who are just simply playing, in league cricket, and they are playing against an opposition who are. Maybe you got promoted last season and you haven't played at their ground for maybe 3, 4, 5 seasons, and you need to work out what that venue has in store. So, you need to sort of tap up your contacts, see if you can get in touch with the groundsman or talk to someone who's played for that team in the past and find out what's happening. And it's going to be a bit more ad hoc than it would be at the highest level, the professional level, but there's still things you can do,
yeah.
Aren't there?
Absolutely, and scorecards tell a history, and it's no different from that. And there's trends that come out of scorecards, and Crick Info nowadays has every single game that's played at the professional level on it. But also the league websites for all of the leagues that run throughout the world will have exactly the same type of info. And even if you know whether when you win the toss that the history of the ground tells you that you're better off batting first than rather than bowling, that's still an advantage you had if you hadn't looked at it in the first place. So those things come into play massively.
I remember when I was captain of our club's second 11, I did something like that. I went through the old scorebooks back about 3 or 4 years and just worked out what a par score was on on our ground for the second 11, and what a winning score was, and what the average score was, you know, batting second and things like that. And it's funny, you know, because the tradition is at our ground, everyone thinks, you know, 190, 200, that's a good score. That'll get you what you want batting first. But when it but when you looked at it, the games that we won, and this is over a 3 or 4 year period, the games that we won when we batted first, although we may have scored 190, often the opposition were bowled out for less than 130. So it suddenly changes the makeup of your planning of your declarations and the planning of the way you're going to bat when you know that you can win with 150 on the board.
Absolutely.
So it just goes to show that kind of analysis you should be doing even at club level.
Yeah, well, we did it at Chard a couple of years ago when I was playing them, and we worked out that nobody would chase down 180 on our ground, which is, as you say, is a low figure. So it was a 45 over game. So our aim was to get 180 in the 40th over, and give ourselves 5 overs of getting ourselves way above it to put scoreboard pressure on. And often, because we weren't trying to smash it all over the place from ball one, and we weren't being reckless, we'd actually get to 40 overs and have 210 on the board, and then end up somewhere near 300, 270, 300 by the time we got round to it.
Yeah, certainly in that limited over format, that's it, isn't it? You know, it's all over. You know, you just have to stay focused, and everything's in your favour.
No, exactly right. So yeah, that Benny stats I think are massive, because they do inform you. But as you say, your routines aren't going to change massively. It's just that last 5%. And if you know, two teams to get to a final have the right to get to the final must be playing quite well. So if you can gain 5% worth of advantage on the opposition, in the specific stuff, then fantastic. And that's got to be a confidence booster going into the game.
Okay, so let's move on to the interview section this week. And if you remember last week, we spoke to the Cricket Asylum, who are running the world's first 4-lane pitch vision system, all integrated into a proper cricket school. And this week, we talked to Matthew Dawson, who's the head coach there, and he's going to tell us a little bit more about how he links in actual proper real-life coaching into technology like pitch vision. It's the interview section on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, and this week I'm joined by Matthew Dawson, who, among many coaching roles, he's head coach for the Cricket Asylum in West Yorkshire. Welcome to the show, Matthew.
Yeah, thank you, David.
So, for those of us who aren't quite sure, what is it that you do kind of day to day? What's your role?
Well, full-time cricket coach, so offer my services to schools, clubs, you know, one-to-one and such thing like that. Recently got in touch with Chris Berry at the Cricket Asylum, so hopefully we're spending a lot of time there doing one-to-ones and running courses and all that kind of thing. So it's exciting times at the moment.
Yeah, and of course we're very keen to work with the Cricket Asylum, being the first completely integrated with pitch vision facility in the world. So it's very exciting for both of us. And I wanted to get your view on things when it comes to technology and cricket, because no one's really done anything like this on this scale before. So as a coach, how is something like pitch vision going to be able to help you coach and make better cricketers?
Oh, it's just brilliant, really. I mean, you know, a lot of coaches talk about video analysis and everyone knows how useful that is, but the number of coaches that actually take a video camera around, set it up and go through all that is probably quite few. So having this sort of thing built in with all the added stats and replays and all that kind of thing is just unbelievable. And just using it on Saturday, we had a lot of kids down and I managed to just stand at the back of the net and just calling kids over saying, come and have a look at this. What do you think? You could say, look, it pitched in a good area. And then they could look at their arms and what position they're in and all the rest of it. And the good thing is, from my point of view, that the players can, you know, assess and learn for themselves rather than me having to show and explain everything. You can really put the learning onto the player, which is something that I like to do with the players. We had some under nines there, which it was a bit of a hit. They were wanting to say a faster ball and all that kind of thing. But
yeah.
At the same time, it's really useful because of the way the pitch vision's set up, and they've got to touch the centre with the feet and get the ball into the right area for it to complete a delivery. With the under nines who were struggling to bowl, you can just say, look, unless you hit these two areas, unless you run through the crease and actually bowl a straight ball, you're not going to see a flashy ball. So in a way, it encourages the younger ones to bowl properly as well. And obviously then if you're talking about older age groups, you can start going into the pitch maps and going a bit into greater detail with the video analysis. So I think it's limitless, to be honest, as far as the age group's concerned.
Different coaches have different styles of coaching, especially here in the UK. The ECB encourage coaches to develop a coaching philosophy that is their own. So,
yes.
So what's your philosophy? What's your coaching philosophy?
Very much wanting the players to learn for themselves. I mean, if a player's doing well, I don't like to see it that I've done a good job. Maybe just facilitate them in doing a good job. All I can do is set up the sessions and give them this sort of environment to learn. But I do believe it's up to the player, and I love the players learning for themselves, questions and simple questions like, what have you done well, what could you do better? And especially with the pitch vision, you can just get them to look at that. So I'm a big believer in players learning for themselves, and I can just push them as hard as I can and see how well they respond.
Well, that's an interesting point, because in the old days, if you like, there was a prescribed way of doing things, kind of the MCC coaching book, if you like. That's that's kind of seen as quite old fashioned and all that kind of thing. So with that approach of saying, okay, this is the problem, I want you to solve the problem yourself, and you're just kind of facilitating that, helping people do that with tools, technical tools like pitch vision, or even with simple things like cones.
Yeah.
How much does that mean that technique is going out of the window and people are just coming up with their own solution for things, or do people come up with their own solutions that very closely match what is known as technically correct anyway?
I think yeah, your latter point's the main one. I don't think technique's going to go out the window. You need a solid technique to play a range of shots effectively. But I think everyone's individual, and not everyone's going to have the same stance with the same backlift. And for me, I don't want to be coaching robots and telling everyone to do that same thing. Everyone's individual. You've got things that work for them. I think it's more about tinkering with them, making small changes that make a big impact on the game. You've only got to look at Lara, Shander Paul, all different players like that. They've got, varying techniques that work for them. And, far from what the textbook might say as well.
Yes, and of course, this week we have announced exclusively that Kevin Peterson will be doing online coaching for us on the Pitch Vision Academy. And he has some incredible things that he does and technical things which would never have appeared in any coaching book. And he worked them out for himself. So
exactly, yeah.
So I suppose the question there is, how much can you copy a person like Kevin Peterson? Is it more to do with copying his technique, or is it more to do with copying his attitude of, I'm going to do this for myself and whatever works for me works?
I think it's the attitude. I think, 50 years ago, through the offside, rather than whipping him through leg side like you can do, to good effect. So I don't think it's good that players copy these players. I mean, that's one thing, like the Dilshan and Owen Morgan. These kinds of players, they can pose a problem to coaches when kids are just trying to copy them when it might not be their natural style. I think it is more about copying the attitude of, this is the way I play it and this is the way I'm going to do it. And then the kids and the players have got to work that out, to suit their own style.
Well, Matthew, thank you for your time today. It's been interesting to chat about coaching and see how a real-life coach is integrating this technology, and applying it sort of on the ground, if you like, rather than sort of the theoretical, this should be good, but this is actually where Pitch Vision is doing some real good to real people, which is always good to hear about.
Yeah, Saturday we had 50-odd kids plus parents through the door, and you know, they were just amazing. The response has been brilliant. The parents were just, even though we were keeping the coaching style pretty simple, they were just really, really impressed with the way we went about things and obviously the technology itself. So it's going to be good.
Exactly. Well, great to talk to you, and hopefully we'll be able to catch up with you in a few months' time to find out what kind of a difference you're making to people in the longer term, as well as that instant kind of, wow, this is really good feedback.
Yeah, no, that sounds good. Brilliant.
Great. Thanks for your time.
All right. Thanks, David. Thank you.
It's about time we caught up with the reader's questions section, and so we've got a couple of questions which I've managed to wrestle off at Berners this week. If I pick out the best questions, Gareth, you can give us your thoughts on both of them.
Yeah, no problems.
And so the first question is from Abhishek, and he says, I'm 17 years old and I play club cricket in Indonesia, and due to the lack of resources, I'm a self-made leg spin bowler. We play our games on AstroTurf, which has a base of concrete below it, and that makes my balls bounce a lot occasionally. This makes it difficult for the keeper to take edges successfully. Can you recommend some drills to help the keeper improve? And there's a secondary part of that question, but let's talk about the keeper first, and then we'll move on to the second part of the question. So, Gareth, what do you think?
The first thing you look for any keeper, irrespective of the bounce of the ball, is posture and their upward movement with their head, which gets them into a non-powerful position because their legs straighten and they can't move out of that position. So first thing I'd do is get almost sideways on and have a look at a keeper. And what you're looking for is almost a Z shape through their body, which gives you a real powerful position in your legs, because your legs are all coiled up and your head's nice and low and your hands are nice and low, to be able to spring left, right, or in this case, to take balls that are bouncing excessively. The next thing I'd do is get in front of a wicketkeeper with a tennis racket and some hard tennis balls, and I'd be hitting the ball up from a length, from the ground up, to try and get it into around the rib cage or up to shoulder level. Not particularly fast to start off with, to just get them to get used to the ball bouncing at that level, coming out of that Z position, that good posture, and catching the balls in that way. And what you're looking for here is for the hip, your outside hip, to open up. So if it's a leg spinner bowl into a right hander and it spins from off stump outside off to outside off stump, then your right hip will open up, and your right hip opening up enables the hands to get up through the ball and create a catching area for the wicket keeper as well to work within. And then the last technical point would be just to have a look at the elbow, the right elbow of the wicket keeper when they're taking that ball that's bouncing from off stump to a right handed batter and spinning out even more. Because what tends to happen is that elbow gets quite high, and if that elbow is high, then it reduces the catching area of the hand, because the hand turns quite flat as that elbow gets quite high, and you end up getting a lot of balls that either hit the thumb and the end of the thumb, or go over the top of the hands, which is what it sounds like this lad's experience on these bouncy wickets. So the real solution to that is to try and keep your elbows tucked in, keep your elbows tucked in together, which gives you a nice big catching. You hit lots of tennis balls from that, increasing the intensity of that, and basically build it up from there, and then incorporate cricket balls as you go through, because as the balls can get used to taking those balls off real bowlers as well.
And you can't, as a wicketkeeper, you can't practice catching enough. It's one of those things where volume is key, isn't it? That's, you know, the more you do it, the better you get. Simple as that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a numbers game, keeping wicket. And that's where the hard tennis balls come into play, because the trouble with a numbers game keeping wicket is if you're always using a cricket ball and you get a bruise, you can't keep your volume up because you just keep getting nailed on that bruise. So that's where the hard tennis balls come into play. And you can really build that volume up with hard tennis balls and incredible balls, and then obviously test yourself with a cricket ball. But as soon as you get a bruise in that hand, it's hard work. So that's why I use a variety of different balls to try and increase the volume that I get into the keepers.
The second part of that question is to do with Abhishek's googly, and he says that his googly goes too high and it normally ends up as a full toss. So what's he doing wrong there?
It sounds to me as if he's got too much weight on his back foot, which a lot of people have when they bowl spin. So their weight's going backwards, and as a result, the release position is a little bit early and upward. One of the great leg spin coaches, Terry General, always used to talk about the front arm being really dynamic and pushing towards the batter's face. So an imagined face, that automatically brings the body weight forward and over the top of the front leg, which means that the release position is appropriate, which means that you have a consistent release position and a consistent trajectory. Because what you don't want to have is your googly coming out with a different trajectory than your leg spinner, because that will be a really easy giveaway for a batter.
And why would that happen when he looks to bowl a googly? Is it because he's concentrating so much on getting that wrist position right that he loses the fundamentals of his action?
Yeah, absolutely right. You know, a googly, some people can bowl it very naturally, and other people find a leg spinner easier to bowl. But ultimately, you want to have a consistent action with both of them being delivered up. So you get up and over, and shoulders can rotate over. And normally, when you introduce a new delivery or a variation, then it takes a while to adapt. But good use of the front arm with any delivery that a leg spinner bowls. So if you think about Shane Warne's strong position with his front arm, and how that front arm stays nice and straight and works into his side, enabling the bowling shoulder to come up and over a braced front leg, then you can't go too far wrong.
Well, the second question this week is slightly different. It's less about coaching advice and more about opinion, but it's quite an interesting question, so I definitely thought we could discuss it. It's from regular correspondent Robin Collins, and he says, it's great to see a new fast bowler burst onto the scene, the Australian, Pat Cummins. And his question is, how will Australia manage his workload and what training needs to take place for his development? And the second part of that question is, was his early success, because of course he burst onto the scene in his first test match as an 18-year-old, was his success down to nobody having any video footage of him?
Yeah, I mean, the first part of the question is, without going into specifics, he's going to get looked after very well, because an old colleague of mine, Troy Cooley, is in charge of his bowling program, who liaises then with Craig McDermott, the national bowling coach that's with the team. But it will be a very scientific program. The training programs will be very specific to Pat's needs and Pat's development areas. And Troy is an absolute master in that. And so he's going to be well catered for. And the little injuries that he's had now will be dealt with, I'm sure. And we'll see a lot more of this lad over the course of next few years, because he's got a fantastic mentor in Troy Cooley sitting behind him. In terms of what he's going to be doing, you can't get away from having a really strong core and a really strong set of legs. And because he's so young, he's coming into that phase where it's really opportune, the ages of 18 and 23. You can do a lot of work in both of those areas. So I should imagine from an S&C point of view, that will be supporting his action over the course of the next few years. And it's a great window of opportunity for him to put some hard work in that will support him throughout the whole of his career. But as I say, Troy Cooley will be leading that program, and having worked with Troy a bit, I know that it will be a very thorough program, very specific to Pat's needs, so he's going to be well catered for in that.
Yeah, and I think we will see players getting injured less as the scientific approach to strength and conditioning and keeping people on the park and rotation and all that kind of thing comes to fruition. I think we will see less. I mean, bowling is an activity which can get you injured quite easily. You'll never eliminate it, but I certainly think we'll be seeing less injured players and more and better rested players, you know, in the next 5-10 years.
Yeah, and the management of players will be the thing that will improve as a result of information, definitely. But then you also have to balance that, and it's a sort of word of warning from the scientific angle. You have to balance that with people like Glenn McGrath, who had the strength work in them because of the not so much of the programs that they were on, combined with the programs that they had between the ages of 18 and 23. But Glenn would need to bowl, and there would be some bowlers that will be along those lines. You know, that just have to bowl. Andy Caddick was a classic one that I had at Somerset, in that you couldn't stop him bowling in pre-season, because that was the way that he really got the overs into his legs, which enabled him to bowl long spells in the championship season. But you don't get all of your bowlers being like that. And I would suggest looking at the way that Patrick Cummins goes about his business, where he's a very dynamic, explosive bowler, gets through the crease, very fast delivery, very fast bowling arm. that he would need to be managed, particularly over the next couple of years. And then going on to the second part of the question about video analysis, well, there's no way that any of the teams that he'd have faced wouldn't have had any information on him, any video analysis, because, you know, he's played enough cricket and you can always get hold of him. I was getting hold of information on Sri Lankan bowlers from all sorts of test matches or one days when I was the video analyst and doing all the analysis with England. So you can always get hold of it. The thing that I saw and statistically monitored was you've got a great opportunity at the start of your career because players haven't played against you and they're only working off the video footage. You've got a great opportunity to get ahead of the game, really, and get some good performances in early. And I think it's tough for people now to do what Graham Gooch did all those years ago, where he struggled right at the beginning of his career and then really had a fantastic career at the end. It's not an easy thing to do now. You need to have a fairly decent start. You need to be able to get some runs under your belt and some wickets under your belt in your first few tests. And if you look at the guys that have made a real impact in the last 5 years in both ODI and Test cricket, they've been the ones that have taken the opportunity straight up, because as soon as you've played a couple of series, it's not just the video footage, but now you've got the Hawkeye technology, which tells you what lengths, what variations you bowl and all of that about you.
It's Soapbox time on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, and every week one of the presenters gets to have a go at talking for a minute on the subject of their choice, which is completely uninterrupted and uncriticised or commented on by anybody else. So this week it's Gareth. So Gareth, over to you for the soapbox.
Well, I'm going to talk this week about writing people off too early in sport, which means that, you know, you have a long career out of it and you get the opportunity to play over a long period of time, and yet I hear parents and coaches saying that players are washed up at the age of 13, or he's never going to be able to play at the right level when he's a 13-year-old. You know, he's not going to be a senior first-class player or anything. And I've heard a lot of people written off, and you've only got to look at players like the guy that we were talking about earlier, Kevin Peterson, who started off as nothing and has ended up being a... And in fact, Graham Swann, who was written off at the age of 21. And you look at spin bowlers around the world, and they have to develop. They develop a bit later. Shane Warne was a late developer in terms of his international career, but look at what he achieved. And the same with Swanee. So the next time I hear anybody saying that somebody's not going to make it at the age of 11 and 13, then they're basing that more on crystal ball than they are on actual knowledge, because players develop at a different rate and we need to give them the opportunity to do so.
That's all we've got time for on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. But before we leave, as is our tradition, we're going to pick a winner of the best question of the week. And of course, if your question is picked as the best one of the week, the one that you send in, then you win a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So if you're interested in getting some premium coaching without having to pay for it, then send in your question. So we have two questions this week, Gareth. Which one do you think was the best?
Two great questions again, but Abhishek is the guy that I'm going to award it to this week about his leg spinners and also trying to help another cricketer out, which is his wicketkeeper, which in turn will help him out as well.
Yes, well, we love leg spinners and we love wicketkeepers. I've got a soft spot for those two positions, especially working together. So I think I completely agree with you this week. Congratulations, Abhishek. And as I said, if you want to send in your own question to the show, you can do so, and you're in the running for a prize, an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy, courtesy of pitchvision.com. So, Gareth, what's the phone number and email address for people who want to send in their questions?
Phone number is 0208 816 7691, and the email is coach@pitchvision.com.
You can also get us on Twitter at PV Cricket Coach, and you can also find us on Facebook, Pitch Vision Academy, if you do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. If you want to listen to this show every week, but you can't be bothered to keep checking back to see when we've uploaded it, then you can subscribe to the show in iTunes. So it will automatically download the latest show every time you open up your iTunes. To do that, all you need to do is go onto iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy and click the subscribe button. If you don't use iTunes, we still welcome you along to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, because you can still subscribe But if you go to pitchvision.com/academy, find the latest show there, and that gives you all the details on how to subscribe if you don't use iTunes. That's all for this week. So until next time, when hopefully we'll have Bernard back from his holiday, we'll see you next time. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, David. Take care, mate.